Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is my co-host Sean O'Connell. It is Christmas week. Merry Christmas to you and to yours. We are a podcast about movies, if you haven't listened to us before. You can find us on Fandango.com as well as Movies.com. And Sean and myself are on Twitter as well. Sean, Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you and to your family.
Yeah. This is a busy week. Not only are there a lot of movies arriving in theaters on Christmas Day, but, you know, people are traveling around with their family. They're watching movies with their family. I've been watching movies all week. I've been staying at my parents' house watching films. And so I think that's what a lot of people are going to do this week. And with all these films hitting theaters and you're with your family, which films do you see with which family members? I think is an interesting sort of topic to talk about. And then New Year's Eve is next week, and we have New Year's movie-related resolutions that we want to share with you. And so let's get the ball rolling. Sean, let's look at these. When you look at the Christmas Day releases, all these movies, is there anything that pops out? Is there anything that says, oh, you know, yeah, you have to see this over all of the rest of them? See it first, and who do you see it with?
You mean besides Spring Breakers? Like, you should see Spring Breakers with every family member possible.
You know what's funny? Last night I have a pack of screeners that I brought to my parents' house to watch movies with, and right. Out of all of them, the only consensus film my wife, my father, my mother would want to watch was Spring Breakers.
But you guys didn't. You didn't watch it.
Actually, not my mother. It was right. My father and my wife.
I think they would make it through the first 2 minutes.
That's what I tried to tell them. That I tried to say. My wife said, "But James Franco," and I was like,
"You know, he's great. He's great.
He's great in it." But I don't know if this is, you know. And then my mother, of course, because my father really wants to watch. My mother, why do you want to watch Spring Breakers? You know. But she doesn't realize that my father is 76 going on 15.
I want you to record a podcast of your parents watching it, like an audio commentary of them watching Spring Breakers.
Oh, I don't know. I think 2 minutes in, just the opening credit sequence, my mother will be like, "Oh God, I'm not watching this.
I have a real answer. My real answer is Saving Mr. Banks. Saving Mr. Banks is opening wider. It's in a few theaters right now. I watched it again recently. I love this movie. And I may end up being like in the minority, because there are people who are already talking about the fact that it whitewashes the facts and it Disneyfies the story and blah, 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 blah. Which is fine. I mean, that's probably all legitimate, because I don't think P.L. Travers, the author of Mary Poppins, ever fully got on board with the way that Disney, you know, handled her beloved character, because he put animation where she didn't want animation, and he turned it into a musical, which she was not a big fan of. But I love movies about the movie-making process. You know, we have these movies like Mary Poppins. You can pull them off the shelf, and you just kind of think that they got there, you know, magically. Like, they just kind of appeared, and there was a very difficult process to get Mary Poppins made. And I love, there's a scene where, you know, the composers are coming up with the chorus to A Spoonful of Sugar, and they have it. They kind of know what they want to do with it, but they don't have the words to it. And, you know, they're at like a beat up little piano, and they're creating a song that is going to be such a part of our, you know, my childhood and our pop culture. Like, you can just sort of whistle it and everybody knows what Mary Poppins is. And I love to see when the sparks sort of go off and the creation of these legendary pictures come to life. And I thought Emma Thompson was amazing as P.L. Travers, and Tom Hanks is really good as Walt Disney. It's not a huge role for him. It's not his movie necessarily. But I think if the whole family wants to go see something that is totally enjoyable, and if you love Mary Poppins, there are some really great nods to the Mary Poppins film and things that make it into that story. I thought it was great, and I think your whole family's going to love it.
My pick for the movie you have to see over the Christmas break is The Wolf of Wall Street, Martin Scorsese's film. This is not a film that you can go see.
I can't wait to hear how you sell this.
This is not a film that you can go see with the whole family, of course. Maybe this is a film that you go see with the uncle who tells dirty jokes. You go see this with the brother-in-law who does not stop quoting Goodfellas whenever he's around you. But that's who you go see it. It is Goodfellas on Wall Street is what it feels like. But it is also a really filthy movie. A lot of sex, a lot of drugs, lot of foul language. Most of the time, all three in the same scene. And it's just a movie about overindulgence that also overindulges. It's 3 hours long. It could be a little bit shorter. I think Martin Scorsese was pressed for time on this one. There's actually word that they thought about, considered the fact of releasing it as two parts, 4 hours long, which I don't even know. Watching this movie in two parts for 4 hours, I don't even know. I think I would probably commit myself when I walked out of it. But you know, it's a really great story. It's a great rise and fall story for Scorsese. And if you look at Goodfellas, you know, a lot of some people walked out of Wolf of Wall Street. They said, why do I care about these guys? You know what? So now they're living scot-free. They got off the hook. They did all these horrible things to people. But, you know, Goodfellas is the same way. You know, Scorsese doesn't tell stories maybe where they don't all have happy endings for everybody. And I think it's just a really fun movie, a dark crowd pleaser.
Right. Awesome. I can't wait to see how it plays in like middle America. You know, are they going to come out and see it? Is there a curiosity factor to it? You know, Scorsese got a real boost from this story that sort of burned up social media the other day, you know, about him getting chastised by an Academy member screaming, shame on you, you know, for the movie that he created.
Which is disgusting, because if you know Martin Scorsese and you look at his filmography and you're screaming at this man, shame on you, is disgusting, I think. I'm sorry.
No, it's horrible, but I mean, he has to also see in the back of his mind, like, oh, that's really going to help, because there's now this curiosity factor. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting movie. It's got fantastic performances, but you have to be ready for it. You have to know that, you know, this isn't going to be a film that is peachy. It's dirty and it's dingy, and as dislikable as these characters are, it's weird that you actually like them. I think Scorsese is a genius in that fact. He always makes these movies about these really unlikable people, but you love them. You love watching them.
If you loved Hugo,
bring the kids. It's about a wolf.
Bring the kids.
About a wolf who runs around Wall Street. But see it. If you're a Scorsese fan, if you're a Goodfellas fan, you've been waiting for the next Goodfellas. I think this is probably the film that comes the closest to it.
We definitely have to talk about Grudge Match, because it does seem like every year, right around Christmas time, Hollywood tends to program a comedy that, you know, appeals to different demographics. It crosses the board. You might get something like Parental Guidance. You might get something like The Guilt Trip, and it's got recognizable actors playing to a safer audience. And in this case, I think this year it's Stallone and Robert De Niro trading off of their boxing legends, whether it be Rocky Balboa or – I mean, it's really funny that I don't know people associate De Niro with boxing movies, even though he was in probably one of the greatest, you know, boxing movies of all time. But Raging Bull is about so much more than just it wasn't the crowd pleaser that the Rocky films were, but it was obviously it established De Niro as somebody who's always going to be linked to that image of him in the boxing ring. And it's about guys who are past their prime and they're trying to reunite for a fight that never happened. They fought twice before. Stallone won one time. De Niro won the other time. They were supposed to have what's called the grudge match to see who would finally triumph, and it never happened. And so they're trying to put it together years later. But they work in a ton of really easy comedic elements. Kevin Hart plays the fight promoter who's trying to make it all happen, and he does Kevin Hart. You know, he does his whole Kevin Hart thing. Alan Arkin is in it, playing Stallone's trainer. He does his Alan Arkin thing. Like, it's really funny. Like, everybody cast in it, they were just told, like, do what you normally do, and we'll find a way to shape it into a movie. I think it's something that could really surprise us at the box office this holiday. Like, you'll see the numbers on it. It'll somehow get over 100 million, and you're going to be like, really? Grudge Match did over 100 million? But it's just – that's the kind of movie people see. They're like, oh, it's Stallone and De Niro? I totally want to see that together. And you won't be – you know, you're not going to come out of it angry, but you're not going to come out of it challenged necessarily. Like, wow, that really made me think about different things. It's just a somewhat entertaining, you know, lighthearted – casual comedy that's programmed perfectly against a lot of these other long films like The Hobbit or Wolf of Wall Street or even Banks, which is a little bit long. So if you're looking for something just mainstream that you can bring your aunt and uncle to and maybe some cousins, I think Grudge Match is the one to circle.
Yeah, it feels like a grumpy old men with boxing.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good call. Perfect. Yeah.
47 Ronin.
Yes.
This is
so much coming out.
There is. This seems like a one where teenagers and the like would probably enjoy. Big visual spectacular, a lot of action set pieces, a lot of interesting things. Reminds me of 300, but with samurai. Not getting a lot of great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes right now, but I think if you have a young kid, preteen, teenager, who just needs to get out of the house for a little while because they're running amok and you're sick of them and they've been home from school for 5 days, this seems like one that will definitely entertain them for a couple of hours.
Yeah, totally agree.
Believe.
Oh, gosh. How is this movie flying under the radar? Is Justin Bieber so over that like he can put out a concert film at Christmas time and nobody really knows that? I've not heard a single thing about this movie.
I think because it's Justin Bieber, right, and everyone who's into Justin Bieber will already know about this movie because they're into Justin Bieber.
Okay.
And everyone who isn't into Justin Bieber doesn't need to know about this movie because they're not going to go see it.
Wow. I mean, it feels like it's just sort of coming out in theaters, and maybe it's being promoted all over the place. I have no idea, but I've not seen any commercials for it. I've not seen trailers for it. It just seems to exist.
It does just seem to exist. And it seems like it could be a documentary that maybe we get as a special feature or something, a TV special, but instead they said, hey, it's Justin Bieber. We followed him around, so we got to put it on, 2,500 screens, right?
I guess.
Actually, it's on 1,000 screens. So it's not even on that big of a wide release, but it is out there. I'm sure it is in all of the big Justin Bieber markets. So if you are a Justin Bieber fan, you can definitely believe.
Basically. Yeah, for our Canadian listeners.
Yeah. Other than that, limited releases. We thought we were going to see August Osage County and Lone Survivor, but both of those are limited now and going into wider release in January. Also, there's Spike Jonze's Her, which is dabbling on a few screens right now, also goes into expansion in January. Out of those three, everyone is loving Her. I really liked Her, too. I think it's a beautiful film about relationships and about connecting with other beings, let's say. And I think it was – I watched it for a second time last night, and I liked it more the second time I watched it. So I think it's a really beautiful movie and really inventive. I really love what they did with the world building and Spike Jonze, and I think he is such an underrated filmmaker that people don't talk about.
He did Being John Malkovich. Mm-hmm. He did Adaptation with Nicolas Cage. He makes these very intelligent, unconventional type of films that, demand that you pay extra special attention to the way that he's constructing them. But you're rewarded. You're deeply rewarded. And this is, to me, his most emotional film because it really asks a lot of interesting questions, great questions about, like, what constitutes a relationship? When can you say that you are in a tight bond with someone? Because it's hard to explain, without having seen the film. But, this guy essentially falls in love with a personality that he doesn't really know or can see. And it's extremely convincing. I mean, it makes you believe in this sort of relationship and makes you think that that we might not be that far off from these type of connections happening in our own society. And I got to just single out Joaquin Phoenix in this film, who acts essentially alongside a voice and gives an incredible performance that, because it's such a crowded field in all of these different awards ceremonies and all these categories that are being, releasing their nominations, he's not getting the type of attention that maybe he should be getting. It's an incredible performance. And so if you appreciate craft, just screenwriting and, as Eric said, this world building, it takes place in the not too distant future and it creates this extremely credible and recognizable world and then drops Joaquin Phoenix and Amy Adams and even Scarlett Johansson acting with just her voice. It's got some of the best performances I've seen on screen all year. So whenever Her finds its way to a theater near you, please seek it out.
Yeah, and I really recommend watching it a couple of times. Watch it in theaters, get it on DVD, and watch it again because, like last night I watched it for a second time, and I really paid attention to the world itself, this near future Los Angeles that he creates, and the little pieces about it, how people aren't interested in money. And that's not driving them at all. And it seems like people are just trying to find things to do to make them happy. Amy Adams is making a documentary about a woman sleeping.
Right. I forgot about that.
Joaquin Phoenix works for beautiful, beautifulhandwrittenletters.com, just writing beautiful letters that people want, you know, and nothing is driving, money is not driving them. And it's interesting to watch a society, even though Jones does not spend much time at it at all, it's just sort of in the background, which I love about him. He sets up these really big ideas and just lets them float around in the background and lets you discover them and lets you figure out what's going on there while he's telling this other story. And I really like that about him. He did it. I know we mentioned that other short that he did on the robots, and the name is escaping me right now, but he did that as well, and that reminded me of this. It's sort of a nice companion film to this. I would actually recommend watching that film, and before you watch Her, do like a double feature. I think it's online. Do you remember the name of that film, Sean?
I don't. No, it's escaping me.
Yes, it's. I'll tell you in a minute if I can see it. Actually,
in the meantime, while you're looking that up, we need to start preparing for 2014. There's so many things that we want to do next year, and there's so many titles that we're going to be covering. But we'd like to single out a few resolutions that we're hoping to make as we put 2013 to bed and start thinking about what we want to do in the coming year. And there's a couple of things that we would like to necessarily change about the way that we cover film and the way that we approach the industry. And maybe it'll inspire you guys to change a little bit about the things that you're thinking about too. Because, you know, it's really hard. Like, there are blockbusters that need to be covered, but there are some narratives that have been written about certain franchises and certain features and certain genres and certain filmmakers. And maybe going into 2014, we're going to change the way we think and maybe have an open mind about certain things and certain people. So, Eric, why don't you start and give me what your 2014 resolution for movie going and watching is going to be?
Okay. Well, first of all, the Spike Jonze short film is from 2010. It's called I'm Here. And okay. It stars Andrew Garfield, Sienna Guillory, and I would highly recommend finding that, watching that, and then watching Her. I think they make beautiful companion movies. But yes, 2014, here we are. My last year's resolution, I actually accomplished. I said I want to see more movies. Yeah, I felt like I wasn't seeing enough movies. I was getting to the end of December. Everybody was releasing their lists and had a lot to say, and I did not, because I did not see enough. But this year, I felt like I saw a lot of movies, and I'm happy. I'm proud of myself. So now, next year, what do I do? How do I up that? What do I up that ante? And I was thinking, I was looking at the landscape, and yeah, you know, that you can put more attention to the lesser known movies at a film festivals, which I feel like I do. I love championing films that I discover. I'm going to Sundance in a couple of weeks, really looking forward to it. So I already do that. So then I'm looking at films and filmmakers, specifically actors, actresses, and saying, who do I need to give another shot to? Who do I want to give another chance to? Who have I written off that is coming out this year and saying, you know what, I'm going to give you another shot? And I was looking throughout the entire schedule, and whose name popped up but Michael Bay and Transformers 4.
Ooh, okay.
And here we are. Transformers, okay? Saw the first one. I was like, it was all right. I watched 15 minutes, the second one, I turned it off. I haven't watched another Transformers movie since. I've actually watched a little bit of the third one, and I was like, I can't watch these movies. So here we go. Michael Bay, back behind the camera, a fourth Transformers movie, rebooting it with a new cast, not rebooting the story,
right,
but just taking a new cast and putting them in there. Mark Wahlberg is leading that cast. So here I am. I'm going to give him a shot. I'm going to give him a chance, Michael Bay.
Well, you loved Pain Again. I mean, we both love Pain.
Yeah, it's not so much about Michael Bay as a filmmaker. I love Michael Bay like I love Tom Cruise. You know, Michael Bay has his off-camera nonsense and his craziness, and he's a madman, but I feel like he gives you your money's worth in terms of the kind of movies that he makes.
Right.
That said, I am not happy about the fact that he's lost himself in four Transformers movies, because I feel like we've lost Michael Bay. I'm glad that he's been able to make Pain Again.
Right.
Because it said, thank God you're still here and making other stuff other than Transformers. And I can't wait to see what he does after Transformers 4, because I think he's finally going to pass that torch and move on to other things. But here he is. He's coming back for Transformers 4 with a new cast. I'm going to give it a shot this time. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to forget about the other three. I'm going to go watch the third one just so I know where everybody's at in the universe, all these robots. And I'm going to come into number four, and I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a clear go. I'm not going to be cynical about it. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to say, Transformers 4, welcome to my soul. And speak to me in an elevated way. And I hope that he surprises and that he delivers a film and it's interesting. It's interesting to see a part four because we're not really getting those these days. We're not getting past part threes. And if we do get past part threes, they're turning into other movies. Like we're looking at the Spider-Man universe, and once that gets past its part three, I think it's going to spin off into other films. So I think movie studios, especially in 2014, are going to start reevaluating what they do when they get past part three. And Transformers 4 is going to be interesting because he's replacing the cast, same robots, sort of kind of in the same story, I guess. So I'm curious to see how that all comes together, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely, because it almost ended up in another director's hands. And a lot of times that's what a franchise will do, is they'll turn it over to another filmmaker and try and bring a breath of fresh air into it. But I'm intrigued that it's still Bay, but with a new leading man and potentially new direction. It almost feels like a reboot without having to completely hit the reset button. And yeah, maybe Pain and Gain was the right way for him to sort of just refresh his own creative juices and maybe come back to this franchise from a new direction. And yeah, I'm totally intrigued. I'm definitely intrigued.
I am. That's my resolution. What's yours?
My resolution is to shine more light on the documentary genre. I was putting together my top 10 list this week and realizing that I very easily could have made a top 10 list of just documentaries. And I don't think that these films, this genre, gets the attention that it deserves because there's so many amazing stories coming out of the documentary genre and so many amazing filmmakers who are, establishing themselves as amazing storytellers. And yet because of the theatrical model is broken from that standpoint, you will very rarely see a documentary on a screen in a theater near you. You have to go to film festivals. There's a film festival in Durham, North Carolina, near me called the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, where all they do is show docs. And I see a lot of great things there every year. It takes place in April. And if you can get there, because you'll see some fantastic stories. But I mean, this year, just 2013 alone, Sarah Polley did a movie called Stories We Tell, where she explored some family secrets and uncovered some really uncomfortable things. Just last night, my wife and I finally sat down and watched Blackfish, which is the story about the treatment of the whales in SeaWorld and how emotional these killer whales are, and just the sheer lunacy of people who get into the tanks, and think that they can train these whales and become friends with them. 20 Feet from Stardom was a great, great story about backup singers who work behind famous musicians and finally gave them some spotlight. And I mean, there was other movies like The Act of Killing, which did really well on the festival circuit that, I watched and was completely disturbed by. But, it was one of these films that, I was really glad I saw it, but I'm not quite sure how I felt about it and how I could process it. And
I almost threw up watching that movie.
Oh, it's such a difficult sit.
It is such a difficult sit, and it's so powerful. And it's the only movie this year that I actually almost threw up watching.
Yeah.
that's how powerful it is.
Well, and I mean, also Room 237 was a great way to sort of reconstruct Kubrick's The Shining, and the guys who did The Wire got back together for a movie called The House I Live In. Like all of these amazing voices are finding that they have a new outlet in documentaries, and yet I still feel like it's this completely underrated genre. So my resolution for 2014 is to continue to beat the drum, but beat it even louder for these amazing stories and these fantastic filmmakers who are stretching their muscles in documentaries and shining a light on some amazing, amazing stories. Because more often than not, if you just are tired of the, the franchise wheel where it's, X number 25 of the latest series and Fast and Furious 49, and you want to hear a creative, original, different, and based in reality story, documentaries are so winning and so amazing. And this year we saw some incredible ones.
Yeah, that's that is a noble quest, Sean.
I'll try.
I don't know if it beats my Transformers 4.
You do have Mark Wahlberg in yours.
Yeah, I don't know if it beats my resolution, but I give you some credit. But no, I completely agree. A lot of those documentaries that you mentioned, I saw, and they all moved me ridiculously. And I think that, I look at reality television and how popular it is on television these days. and I say, how come more people aren't paying attention to documentaries? Because it's like the best reality television that there is.
Eric, what if Michael Bay made a documentary? Then our two resolutions would combine.
If Michael Bay made a documentary about himself,
oh, yes.
I don't know if I'd be able to contain myself, because, you know, if he that would be the greatest documentary. If somebody was just given access to Michael Bay,
right?
You know, 24/7 access to Michael Bay and his life. No matter, nothing is, you know, off guard, and just recorded him for a week.
It's called The Wolf of Wall Street.
I think it's called The Wolf of Wall Street. It's in theaters now. Directed by Martin Scorsese. Oh, God, I'd love to see that documentary. Oh, Michael Bay. Michael Bay on Michael Bay. But anyway, I hope everybody had great holidays, and that you all enjoyed your presents and whatnots under your tree, and that you really enjoy your New Year's too. You know, I think when Sean and I meet back for our next podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into 2014 and give you our most anticipated picks. I can't even believe we're at a whole new year of movies. It just feels like I'm not even done packing 2013 yet. And here we go. 2014 is ramming at us.
The gears keep spinning.
It does. But I'm really looking forward to doing that deep dive into 2014. Also on the horizon is the Sundance Film Festival. I am going to be there, so we can talk about that and some of the films that are going to start shaping the independent landscape of 2014. And a lot of exciting things happening. Sean, I wish you a merry everything.
Thank you, and a happy new year to you and your family. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening to us. We really enjoy doing this podcast, and we appreciate you guys dialing us up.
Yes, I would like to. And yeah, and as I'll leave on this note, Sean, and I didn't even tell you this yet, but I was looking at some of the stats for our podcast last night, and we have crossed 100,000 listens.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Fantastic.
Yes. Yes,
thank you, everybody.
However many podcasts I think Sean and I have done about 40 of these or somewhere about that. And we have crossed 100,000 listens. So,
milestone.
Yes, thank you for listening to us babble about movies every week, and it's really enjoyable, and it's something that I really enjoyed. I know Sean really enjoys. So, thank you,
absolutely,
to all of you. And on that note, enjoy your holiday weekend at the movies. See you in 2014, folks.